This week on Out of the Air features actor and award-winning filmmaker from Chicago, Michelle Joy Tardin. Next, we have a return visit with Chicago-based mural artist Ahmad Lee, Rico the Great, updating us on his new projects and a June exhibit at Gallery Guichard. Our spotlights on Indiana Ballet Theatre's production of Sleepy Beauty on May 9th and 10th with Gloria and Amanda Toohey.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP, 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, and it's going to be our production of Sleeping Beauty by Indiana Ballet Theater. And also we have some things we're going to talk about with their alternate group, the Kaleidoscope. And of course we have Gloria Toohey and Amanda Toohey to talk to us about that. Welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
Aloha, it's so good to see both of you together.
Yeah.
Well, Gloria, we'll first start with you, Sleeping Beauty. And I know we talked a little bit about over the years how you re-energize each version of it. It's not just a repeat of something you've done before, either right. Costumes or new choreography and everything. And so tell us a little bit about how Sleeping Beauty here is coming up in May is going to be different than what you did before.
And actually, Amanda, since she's on right now, she's done a lot of reshaping some of the dances and bringing in some of new dancers to demonstrate.
Yeah, I'll take over for just a moment, if you don't mind, Larry. So actually, we have re-envisioned some of our typical core ballet pieces, as well as the solos, and we've revamped some of them this year. We have a crew that is a bit more advanced and they can handle a bit more, and so we gave it to them and just restage it in a way that I find invigorating and refreshing, to be honest with you. Carabos is the bad guy. That's the Maleficent. And Carabos is not only dancing in point shoes rather than character shoes, as sometimes happens, but she will be engaging in pas de deux during the fight scenes. She'll be tossed around the stage and she'll be dancing throughout the entire time. She has a nice group of bats that are dancing with her and she's very dynamic. Somebody that you normally see in our role of Sugar Plum Fairy, Christy Victor, is actually one of our Carabosas. And Grace Griffin, who is from Valparaiso, is going to be the other one. It's quite nice. Aurora is from Valparaiso. We've got dancers from all over the place here and new choreography. It's very exciting.
Very vigorous. So how far out does the reach go for dancers when you do something, a big production like Sleeping Beauty?
It can go as far south as maybe Jasper County, farther over by Wanata, and over to north, even Whiting and Gary, and down south to Lowell. Even some come over from Chicago. All over the place. A lot are from Lake and Porter counties.
And they've been, you have some people that also, I remember one of your ballerinas also does your, did in the past, your costumes. Is that still going on?
Yes. She's the lilac fairy, which is the good fairy that changes it from dying to sleeping for Aurora. And she does the costuming. So along with, I still do a little bit of that. So.
Excellent. I remember we interviewed her a long time ago when we were doing this live in the studio. So it's we had her in there. So excellent. And you're performing this. Of course, I was there to. I never was there for your first performance, but IUN main stage. I was there just for that short interim period. But you're doing it there, and maybe tell us about the dates and times, and we'll revisit that at the end also.
Yeah, we have. It is May 9th and 10th. May 9th at 1 o'clock p.m. and the 10th, which is a Saturday, at 1 o'clock and 6 p.m. The tickets are on sale right now at 22tix. You can actually go onto our Facebook page or website, ibt.org, or just on Facebook to Indiana Ballet Theater, and you can see the links there.
Perfect.
We'll have a 10 a.m. field trip performance also on that first day. Right.
So tell us about Kaleidoscope. That's something else that, Amanda, you've instituted and working with. And first of all, what is it and how does it differ from the regular ballet theater things that you do?
Absolutely. Kaleidoscope is a modern contemporary dance concert. It's a professional dance concert where it's not a recital or anything like that associated with the school itself per se. It is associated with the company and it's just dynamic. It's physically athletic, demanding work. It's precise. Personally, I find it very, very exciting, though we do also have emotional pieces in there as well where they connect. The costumes are colorful. I have professional alum coming back this year who have Simone Denwood, who's in New York right now. She graduated from SUNY. We have Sofiana Bodish. We have quite a few people coming in. I won't name them all, but all new choreographers and a diverse cast. It's new work this year. We only have a couple of pieces of repertoire that has not been performed in probably about 10 years, but everything else is brand new and exciting. So
is Kaleidoscope exclusively with people who are dancing within your organization other than the alumni?
It is this time. Sometimes we do bring other people in, but this time it is exclusively Indiana Ballet Theater adult and company one and two members. Sometimes we get those trainees in there as well for a cameo. It gets them involved and they get excited and can't wait until they're the lead people in the show. But this year we're grouping some pieces together. So there will be fewer breaks in the show. There will be an intermission, but longer pieces. It's kind of like what you would see in any metropolitan area, to be honest. Chicago, very similar to this show.
Excellent. Well, we're getting in our last minute here. So tell us about dates for that. And I know you don't have the times and everything all set for Kaleidoscope, but just give us that. So we have a run up and then we'll go back to Sleeping Beauty.
Sure. Absolutely. That is at the Memorial Opera House, the revamped and beautiful one here in Valpo. And it is May 31st. And that will be on our website as well as Facebook.
Very good.
And it is 2 and 7 p.m. We have
two performances. And Sleeping Beauty, one more time, dates and times?
That's May 9th and 10th.
Public shows are May 9th at 1 p.m. And then the 10th are 1 p.m. and 6 p.m. at Theater Northwest. We do have that school trip in the morning on Friday. There's a few seats left, but generally that's for schools and special groups.
Excellent. Gloria and Amanda Tuohy from the Indiana Ballet Theater with great events coming on. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing what's going on in your world.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Art in the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, this is Morgan McCabe, freelance theater professional and writer for the Northwest Indiana Times. You are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM. Thanks for listening.
We would like to welcome Michelle Joy Jardine to Art on the Air. Michelle Joy is an actor, award-winning filmmaker, writer, and digital communications professional who specializes in blending political communication objectives with engaging narratives. Passionate about social justice, politics, urban planning, and the intersection of social change and education through storytelling, she provides a unique point of view to any production. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Michelle Joy. It's such a pleasure meeting you.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you here and representing the Toll Theater for your upcoming production, POTUS, which will be coming up later, opening on May 2nd through the 11th, and we'll have more about that later. But right now, we want to know more about Michelle Joy, about your, I call it, origin story, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about yourself.
Yeah, I'll do the hero origin story, not the villain one. But
do both.
Oh no. Yeah. But yeah, I'm actually from Chicago, born and raised. So from the Northwest Side. That's kind of where I've enjoyed the urban planning and the architecture. You know, you have to enjoy those things in Chicago, I feel like, to be a true resident. But I didn't really start doing theater or acting until college. So I went to a boarding school that specialized, it was like a public boarding school, to be clear. Like, I know what my parents did not pay for it. Don't get the wrong idea. You know, theater happened there, but it wasn't like, you know, the main thing. And I played sports instead. But then I was like, wow, I've always said I wanted to be an actor. So why don't I just do it, you know, finally. And so I auditioned for BFA programs. I ended up getting my BFA in acting from the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. So I was in Cincinnati for about 5 years because, of course, COVID happened during my senior year and all of my shows were canceled. So it was, I decided to take a gap year. And then during that gap year from the acting program is when I took a bunch of political science and law courses. So that is where all of that background comes from. And I really was interested in digital media and videography as well. I wrote a short film that I directed, produced, and starred in that did pretty well in the festival season. I got into 11 film festivals, won 4 awards, and was nominated for 10. And that film got me into the Tim Ryan Senate campaign. So I've actually worked in politics. So when this play came across my radar, I was like, wow, I've been one of the 7 women keeping a politician alive, you know, that. So I was like, I have to be in this at some point. And that was the Tim Ryan Senate campaign. Obviously, I don't know how obvious this is to everyone, but we lost to J.D. Vance, who is our vice president. So I guess you can thank me for that. And then after that, I worked at City Hall in Chicago, which was as interesting as you would think it would be, you know, based on whatever you've read about Chicago politics. Then I moved back to campaigns, which is where my heart is. And I worked on many different campaigns with a consulting firm, including the presidential. And that's actually when I booked my first professional theater gig in Chicago. So October, November was a crazy busy time for me. I was in Rabbit Hole by David Lindsay Abaire. And since then, I've been doing freelance work for organizations and a bunch of lawyers who are organizing and doing advocacy work for them. And then, of course, I started here in POTUS at Toll. So that is kind of the background of my life. And it feels like I kind of fell into everything. So I guess I'm thankful I fell in a way that I enjoyed, you know?
All right. So now we're going to talk about the villain aspect, which is, so I'm going to take you back. So Michelle Joy, what was your family household like as a little girl? Were you the performer? And was that encouraged in like elementary school and your middle school? I mean, what were those days like?
Yeah, I definitely was a performer. My mom would be like, what is hamming it up or something? You're a ham. Like that's, she would say things like that. I remember when I was 5, like I put on a little production of wizards and witches, like in my living room for my parents. You know, I mean, kind of everyone does that. You get the cousins together and you're like, here's our dance. And good thing no one really had phones back then, because it's good that that was not
that
recorded.
That is the truth.
That did not need to see YouTube or anything. But, you know, I did little things like that all the time. And whenever there was like a presentation opportunity in school, or like presenting a poster board or something, that was always my favorite project. I was really intimidated by theater in middle school. So in middle school, everyone who did theater was very like, I get private lessons and I've been doing community theater, and you know, and so I wasn't like brave enough really to audition or, you know, do a lot of that. And you know, my parents always loved that I was like, I want to be an actor, and that I was, you know, gregarious and could, you know, do public speaking without worry and whatnot. But I wouldn't say they were the most encouraging of that career path, and they, you know, didn't necessarily cultivate it in me as a younger child. So I was like pretty motivated on my own to succeed in school, like academically and, you know, athletically. And then afterwards I was like, yeah, it turns out this acting stuff doesn't just fall into your lap because you're supposedly talented in your bedroom where no one can see you. You actually do have to go out and do it and audition and get training. But I'm actually really thankful for the education I received, especially at my public boarding school. I think, you know, I was able to read a lot of literature and learn so many things that have really contributed to my ability to be an actor and really get into some characters that maybe other people who have, you know, just kind of been in the performing space for a long time wouldn't necessarily understand as well right off the bat. So I think, you know, the unique experience of not doing theater and performing arts when I was a kid, I was really scared at first, you know, going to college, I'm auditioning. I was like, I'm the worst here. But now I think, it just kind of contributes to, you know, what unique background I can bring to any character. So
I know, because I watched your clip, and your face is so micro expressive. You know,
thank you.
It was just really like all those emotions just running just so subtly across your face. So that kind of like what you just explains that sensitivity, I think.
You know, mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about your filmmaking. Tell us a little bit about your process, some of the subjects you have done so far, and we've seen some of that, but also some of the things you'd like to do. What do you see kind of, and this may be kind of a future cast question, isn't that, do you see pursuing acting as a main thing, or the filmmaking, or your political course? Tell us about the course you have in your young life here.
Well, yeah. That is a great question. If anyone's a psychic, please let me know and you can find me and tell me what my path in life is. But right now I've just decided that I can do everything. I don't really know if that makes sense or but we're trying. But the filmmaking, so my debut short film, We Want A, that's the one I was talking about earlier, that was in 11 film festivals and screened at every indie film here in Chicago. So I was able to see it at the Gene Siskel Film Center for the Midwest Film Festival, at Music Box for Film Girl Film Festival, and a lot of other little theaters. Well, not so little, but not to, you know, just like not AMC, right? And so that was really exciting to see my film up there. I wrote that film because originally in my acting for camera class, my teacher was like, bring in a scene. And I didn't really watch a lot of TV, you know, because I was busy with my full-time job and also in school. So I was like, but the class before, I was in an intro to political theory class just before my acting for camera class, I just threw that script together and I was like, we should do this. But it ended up being 16 pages and they were like, this is way too long to do for this class. But I was like, you know, I kind of want to do the script at some point. So this summer before I graduated and before all my friends left, because I, you know, taken a gap year, I threw it together. And as I worked in a restaurant and they were closed Monday, Tuesdays, and I was a manager there, so they let me film for free. got extras together, put it all together and started submitting, and it was accepted and got screened, much to, you know, my surprise and happiness. So that was my first film, and it definitely is focused on, you know, female relationships, but also how those relationships work in, you know, certain political climates, but not just political, but also, you know, how women relate to society as a whole. So there's a lot of talk about motherhood and what that means, especially for the young women in the film. You know, it's a brunch film. So if you like Sex in the City, witty kind of conversations, you'll probably like this film. And you can find it on Vimeo and on my website. And since then, I've definitely put some scripts together, but I'm ready to do more of like a feature. They say write what you know, and I've, as we've discussed, I've really been in the political arena for a couple of years now. So figuring out how to tell that story without violating any NDAs is kind of where I am at right now. And I do want to be an actor, but the thing about acting is it's like someone has to choose you, right? So you audition and you audition and you audition, and someone else says, yes, you are right for my project and come and do this. And then that's how you get most of your opportunities. So the thing about making your own work and being a filmmaker is that I can just do it. So sure, I need money and I have to fundraise and, you know, do all that things. Yeah. I didn't fundraise for my last film. I just worked extra shifts. So that I can't do anymore. But, so there's all of that, but you can just put your own work up and do it. And nobody is like, you can't be in this or you can't write this. So I think hopefully that is kind of where I can get my way into the acting industry part more. But I'm excited to keep doing theater in the Chicagoland area. And I was on an episode of Chicago Fire, and I did a short, like someone else's short film. So I've done a little bit in the film and TV space, but I'd like to break into that more. So if there's anyone like that is a great career path, I think you may not know who she is, but Glenda Jackson, she was a British actress who won like a BAFTA and a Tony and whatnot. And she was also the leader of the Labour Party in her later life and was an elected official. And then she went back to acting and did like a play on Broadway, and she just didn't let anyone tell her what she was allowed to do. So I think that would be great, even if I didn't necessarily run for office, but like, you know, still being able to work in the advocacy or political space. I will say the acting to politics pipeline in America is, I feel like it needs to be changed. You know, there have been some figures that I wouldn't necessarily want to be on a list with, but you know, I'm happy to change those perceptions. So
we talked about your filmmaking. Do you like the creative force then you have as a filmmaker compared to being an actor, where you have to, well, a lot of times you're picked for a role, but you don't have some of the creative choices that the director is making for you? How do you balance that? And probably the second part to that question, is there politics in your future?
So the first part of that question, I definitely, as an actor, you go in, especially for film and TV, right? Theater, you go and you have rehearsal. And at the end of the day, I guess you could just throw away everything the director said on opening night and then do what you want. I mean, that wouldn't necessarily be great for your career, but you could do that. But for TV and film, you go in and let's say you cry on a take, and you're like, you yell on a take. You're like, wow, I'm such a good actor. That's amazing. And then you watch it back, like you watch the final product a year later, and then they didn't even use the take, or they, you know, cut your scene entirely, or they cut your last line or something. And you just have no control over the final perception of your acting ability, you know, because you can also go in with a strong character choice, and then the director's like, actually, I want you to be sad here instead. And then, you know, you're like, no, but I wanted to be angry. And then forever, anyone who watches that TV show associates that character with like that performance. Like they'll never know what, you know, the actor wanted to do. So filmmaking really does let me be more in charge of that process as an actor in it. It is more difficult because you have to have other associates and assistants with you who are really good at who are not afraid to like direct your own personal acting process as the director. So that was a really good learning lesson for me. But beyond that, I suppose I've always, as a young child in middle school and everything, I really enjoyed being the leader of everything. If we were in a project, I was like, all right, guys, this is what we're doing. Here are the parts, yada, yada. I was maybe perhaps bossy was a word that you could use. So I think filmmaking kind of lets me lean into that. And also still the collaborative process of filmmaking is still very valuable. It's not just, you know, auteurs like you do this, you do that, and no one gets to say anything. So I enjoy being on a set and being in charge of the set, but still like cultivating an environment where people are comfortable speaking up for what they think would work. And in terms of politics in my future, I'm definitely, you know, going to keep working on campaigns and for advocacy orgs. I'm in the process of looking for another full-time job because, you know, typically after each campaign season ends, you know, then you're unemployed. So politics can kind of be like acting in that way. So I definitely want to keep working in that space. And I have some friends who are probably going to run for office one day. So I'd love to support them in any way I can. And yeah, hopefully I can just use my storytelling skills to advocate for the causes and candidates that I believe in.
So had you had experiences with The Toll before, or was it the play that brought you there?
Yeah, I'd heard of The Toll. So my first show, Rabbit Hole, one of the actresses in that play was closing a show at The Toll at the time. And she is the one who told me about the audition in the theater. And then when I saw they were doing POTUS, I was like, I have to go to this. I have to drop everything and go to this. I'd seen POTUS at Steppenwolf earlier, but when it was on Broadway originally, I think in 2022, even not seeing it, I just knew, like I said, I was like, I've been one of those seven women, you know? So I got to put that into my work. Like Veep would be a dream to be in, for example. So I'm really excited to be in the like farcical version of Veep, because I'll tell you, Veep feels like a documentary now that I've worked in politics. POTUS is a little less of a documentary. There's some crazy things happening, but you know, it's not too far off. So,
did you get the part that you wanted? I mean, the one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually, reading the script, I mean, I really enjoy the, you know, press secretary and the chief of staff roles, but they are like older characters. So I figured that, you know, my chances of getting those roles would be lower. And Dusty, the president's mistress, is very interesting and a very difficult character because she seems one way and then she's another and then she's another way. And you can't really categorize her into like a certain stereotypical farcical character. And so I was really excited to explore that. And of course, I said I've been one of the seven women, but I've obviously never been, you know, the mistress of a candidate or anything. So it's a new way to experience working in a campaign or for an elected office for me.
Tell us about the rehearsal process at The Toll. How long are you going to be in rehearsal to your opening? How often you rehearse and that whole thing?
Yeah, I think we have like 2 weeks left for rehearsal. And we started 2.5 weeks ago, I want to say. We rehearse 3 to 4 times a week, but on Saturdays it's like a, you know, 11 to 7 or noon to 6 kind of ordeal versus during the weeknights, it's 3 hours. So they do that to, you know, accommodate our full-time jobs and everything that we have to do in addition to acting. And so far it's been really fun. There's a lot of stage combat in the play. So there's a lot more choreography that you have to learn if for a, you know, actor in a play versus like someone in a musical is obviously probably learning choreography a lot. But in the play, there's a lot of stage combat and, you know, it's just like a farce, right? So it's big, it's no like bloody noses or anything. But there is a lot of rolling across the floor and dragging and running and tackling. And so that's been really fun because I have not been in a show yet with that much stage combat. And that has definitely been a really big part of our rehearsal process. And then our next part that we have to get to is, not to spoil anything, but there's a little concert sort of at the end in the final act. And I actually get to learn dance choreography for that. And the whole team will just be running around in many different places in that last scene. So it's been a lot of choreography, a lot of blocking, and a lot of character work. But so far, we've had a blast doing it. And I'm really excited to put the final scene together. And then, of course, do tech and go up.
Do you have a favorite role that you would like to do that you haven't done?
Oh, my gosh. for plays, you know, I'll say Maggie for Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. That would be a goal, a dream of mine. So there's some great political plays also coming out, like Kings by Sarah Burgess hasn't been put up, but that's a great play. But yeah, I'll go with the classic there for that answer.
Excellent. And yeah, tell us a little bit about, we have about 2 minutes left, but tell us a little bit about performance dates and how to get tickets, everything like that.
Yeah, so we only have 6 shows. It's a pretty short run, so you have to get in your tickets and go see it. We open the first 2 weekends of May, so that's May 2nd, 3rd, 4th, and then May 9th, 10th, and 11th. On Friday nights, those 2 Fridays, we're at 7:30 p.m., and then the Saturday and Sundays, we're at 2 p.m. for matinees. So we open in 2 weeks, May 2nd, Friday, 7:30 p.m., and then Saturday, Sundays, 2 p.m., and then the Friday, 7:30 p.m. So only 6 chances, though. To get your tickets, you're going to want to go on the Toll website. So that's tolltheater.org, TOLLETHEATER.org. So Toll with the interesting spelling and theater with the maybe different spelling that you've encountered. And if you go there, there'll be a ticket website or, you know, link you can click, and that's how you can get your tickets.
Right. I don't know why Kevin and Jeff, who were kind of the founders of the theater, went with the American versus the British spelling, but they sure did. So, well, it's been a real pleasure having you on and telling us about your arts journey. We look forward to maybe seeing what you're going to do down the road, like either in filmmaking or in politics, whether you have actually put your name on a ballot at some point or something like that. I don't know. It's, anyway, you can see our guest today, POTUS, Behind Every Great Dumbass, Are 7 Women Trying to Keep Him Alive. And that's Michelle Joy Jardine. Again, the show will run May 2nd through the 11th, Fridays at 7:30, Saturday, Sunday at 2 p.m. And you can go to tolltheater.org for tickets and information there. It's been a real pleasure to have you on here. I'm Michelle Joy. Thank you for coming on Art in the Air and sharing your arts and performance journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
Hi, this is Dorothy Graydon. I'm a contemporary artist in Northwest Indiana, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are pleased to welcome back Ahmed J. Lee to Art on the Air. His previous time with us was on August 11th of 2023. Ahmed, also known as Rico the Great, has taken the words of one of his artistic influences and crafted a compelling body of work that shares the outrageous through the transparent panoramic lens of a brilliant African-American storyteller. No less a pop culture pirate than Warhol before him, characters and constructs embedded in society's makeup receive a full spectrum color and creative treatment that dances on the lines of irreverent and immersive, which have become distinguishing hallmarks of his style. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Rico. It's so wonderful seeing you again.
Awesome. I'm happy to be here.
Well, Rico, we'll refer people back to your August interview of August 11, 23, but we just thought we might recap briefly your story. I always say how you got from where you were to where you're now, so we'll give the short version on, and then we're going to talk about and update things that you're doing right now. So briefly recap your life and everything, and then we'll move on from there.
Okay. Well, as you all mentioned, I go by Rico the Great when I do all my art stuff, and I am 38 years old, and I live in Chicago, Illinois. I'm born and raised here. I think it's the greatest place in the world. So I always love shouting that out every time I talk about the city. I have been doing art, murals, commission pieces, gallery shows, graphic design, web design, apparel design, pretty much my whole life. I mean, from 13, 14, 15, I started doing corporate jobs because I met some cool people when I was going to Columbia. And researching on my college to actually go to Columbia, I met a lot of people, and I just stayed on people's butts. Like, hey, I need you to remember me. Call me. Hey, if there's a party you can get me in as underage, like, I'll be there. I'll show up. Like, I just always just want to show up and just be involved. But I've been doing art since I was a kid. My mother was a teacher and always just kept me with all the colored pencils, all the markers, all the construction paper. And she just, they could leave me in a room and they come back and it'd be a masterpiece made. So I've been doing art my whole life, and it's just kind of, you know, just took over.
Did you get a lot of recognition for it in school? I mean, were you known? Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I definitely did. In grade school, I couldn't say I was taking it super serious, but, you know, in my art class, I was the best student. And, you know, it just was me doing the stuff I was doing at home and everything like that. And my teacher, Mr. Barron, he was always on me. But, you know, when I went to high school, my next art teacher named Jack Mayer, who was a phenomenal, like, color pencil artist, he really told me, like, hey, I make money doing this outside of being a teacher. Like, and all his pieces were just amazing. Like, and he really took on to me and one of my fellow students, a brother named Matt Warren. And he really put his money behind us in high school to actually show us, like, yo, you guys need to be in contests. You guys need to take this serious. You need to think about going to art school. And he just really told me that there is money for living artists. Because I was always under the assumption, oh, you make money when you die. Like, you build a collection and you pray somebody sees it, that gets it in the museum and stuff like that, and that's where you get money. But he really told me, like, no, it's a big art world out here. And just, like, you're in high school, so you're not traveling the world yet, but you definitely are talented enough to actually be a successful artist.
So visually, how would you describe your art? I'm looking at your website right now, which I know you're going to update. You talk about being a muralist, but some of your works, I think, are like almost like murals indoors, so to speak. So, but describe some of the themes that you have in your work. And of course, I can say this is almost all your work is very bold and bright and colorful. But let's talk a little bit about your work from your perspective.
I mean, in one word, I would say my word is colorful, and I guess I could throw abstract in there as well. I'm all about, you know, kind of just doing and throwing pieces together with, like, the emotions of the day. So, you know, and it's crazy because I paint really fast and I can do large pieces really quick, but you might start a piece on a Monday, go to sleep, not touch it again until Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. And in that time, the world just could change, like, drastically. Seriously. So, I mean, so it's like I might be speaking on politics at the beginning, and then something crazy might happen in my neighborhood that resonates with me, and then that'll be another portion of the piece. So one thing I always tell my collectors, and then my collectors always come back to me, they're like, I bought the piece for a reason, and I'm looking at it a month later, a year later, and I noticed a little Easter egg in there and stuff like that. So I always tell people, like, the piece is always going to change. And I had some collectors that tell me, they say, you put so much in there, you should pull each one of those ideas and make it into a piece itself. But I'm like, it's hard with me. Like, I don't start a canvas knowing exactly where I want to go.
Right. Like, your brain is multi-layered, and so are your paintings. Yeah.
And it's sometimes you're painting over paintings that you made 10 years ago that still had a message. And I've had clients that love that. They're like, you need to do more of that. But it's hard. Like, I paint just from a place of just what's going on and everything like that. So I get a lot of flack from certain people. They're like, man, you could just do so much more if you just separate these pieces and these ideas into separate pieces. But I'm like,
it wouldn't satisfy you the same way, I don't think.
Yeah, I feel it would look so blank and bare, but I have had pieces that, like, you look at them like, yo, there's nothing else. And it's very simple, but it's very rare for me. Because, like I said, I'm always want to be aware. I get to travel a lot for a lot of my work, and I just like researching what's going on in that part of the world or in that city, and what are those laws, and, like, where should I go? Where do you find the real genuine people? So, like, I just love learning, so you're always ever learning and seeing what's going on and adapting to situations that, you know, my pieces just, you know, they show that.
Right, and what I like about it is that I don't think you can ever fully see all of it ever, because every time you look at it, there's a different angle and a different interpretation. So it's one of the kind of paintings that you just can never get tired of, because you're never going to see it the same twice.
Facts. And it's hard to duplicate. Like, people, I'm about to go off on a little tangent, but like, people always say, how do you feel about AI and everything? Like, do you think it could adapt and start pulling your style? I was like, I mean, yeah, cool. It works in certain ways. I use it as a tool in a lot of other of my businesses and stuff like that. But it doesn't scare me about like the art world and stuff like that, because like my pieces is so much. Like, it can get a snapshot of it, but it can never, ever pull everything from one of my pieces. So kind of off the rail. But
so since we talked to you last, you've been involved with like World Basketball Day. How did that come about?
One of my good friends connected me with the YMCA, because they had seen I had done some work with a brand called Round 21, and we did something with the Chicago Sky in the University of Chicago for a day that they were hosting for one of the games. And the World Basketball Day thing came up because he was like, I know a dude that's an artist, cares about the art, you know, and he really just creates cool pieces, and he does apparel as well. So we had an initial meeting, and they liked my work, and they were really excited to just work with me. So they hired me to create 5 pieces, and we only settled on 2 or 3 of them, and we released them with the Sky, and they did pretty well.
What do you do with Paint the City Chicago? That's kind of a current thing. You're doing that. So what is that about?
So Paint the City Chicago is a nonprofit that I was lucky enough to help start with 2 of my friends, Barrett Keithley and Missy Perkins. It kind of came about because during the pandemic, when they were boarding up all those windows all through the city, everything like that, a lot of the business owners and a lot of the people in each neighborhood were like, this is making our town look a little crazy. And I believe the first spot we did was in Wicker Park. I can't remember the French restaurant's name, but it was a guy in a restaurant group, and he wanted his windows painted. He said, hey, if it's going to have to look like this, we should probably put art on there. And once he started it, it just took off through the city. I was lucky enough to be a popular enough artist where people were calling me to all the time to come and touch their boards and everything like that. But in that, it was so many boards, we needed more artists. So we got noticed by the city of Chicago. I want to say it was DK's, I believe. I think that's what they're called. And they actually sat us down and were like, well, I should make a business out of this. Because what happened was a lot of the artists that were getting hired didn't know how to properly write a budget. They didn't know how to write materials in their budget. They didn't know how to write travel. They didn't know how to write food. And they just didn't know how to actually properly run the scope of a project. And so in that, we sat down with them, and the city was like, we'd help expedite getting you your 501(c) to actually hire artists, teach them the game, and get them, you know, get them jobs. And after the pandemic went away and that stopped happening, we started getting a lot of city opportunities to do murals. And then inside of that, we hired more artists, and we actually built a humongous network of young artists that actually can learn the game, teach the game to the new people coming up, and the city really backed us up with it.
That's phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
So what projects are you working on right now? I know there's murals and everything, or other art pieces. You know, since we talked to you last, back in 2023, what are some things you're working on and coming up down the road?
I'll go with the stuff that's about to happen now. April 24th, the NFL is having the draft combine at Lambeau Field. And that's where the Green Bay Packers play. And a company I work with, Round 21, hired me and another artist to actually create apparel around the draft for Lambeau Field in partnership with the Green Bay Packers. So they're expecting, I believe, 40,000 to 50,000 people around the area throughout the 4 days where they do the draft. And we're 2 of the artists that are outside of just the NFL, and their regular apparel, we actually have a capsule that's going to be sold and hopefully sell out throughout that whole time. So that's the closest thing coming up. I have a mural coming up with the Cook County Board of Health. They hired 2 artists to do 2 murals in the city. And I'm still waiting on the contract for that, so I don't know exactly where my mural is going to be. But we just had like our first onboarding call, and they told me that I was one of the artists selected. So I will be doing a mural somewhere.
Congratulations.
Thank you. One of the Cook County Health facilities in Chicago. And then the biggest thing that I have going on is the show at Gallery Gashard, which is going to be on Friday, June 20th. And it's called Fairy Tales in the Hood. And it's basically just about like my upbringing and all the things that I saw in life. And like I said, I've been blessed to travel and everything and go to see other neighborhoods. Like, hood doesn't, to me, doesn't mean just, oh, like the bad neighborhoods and stuff like that. It's like everybody's neighborhood. So I've been blessed to go all through Chicago, and it's super segregated. So I get to see, you know, how the Asians people live and how the Russians and Ukrainian. And I got you pulled with a lot of Ukrainian and Russians. And it's insane because, I mean, if you don't get out and get to be accepted in these neighborhoods and actually, you know, make friends with them, you'll just never know how deeply rooted like their real homelands are in these places. So Fairy Tales in the Hood is just a story about like my upbringing and just how, you know, the Black culture is so like prevalent in every single part of society and everything like that. So it's like, hopefully the art pieces actually can speak to that.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media 89.1 FM on WVLP 103.1 FM. You know, as you were describing all the murals, I was thinking, gosh, does he even have time to paint anymore? So it's really nice that you have this show coming up because it pushes you back into the studio, I guess, because it seems like everything has kind of exploded in a fabulous way with like all these different organizations talking to you. It's nice that you're still connected to the canvas at, you know.
Yeah, see, my studio is based in my home at the moment, so it's awesome waking up when I don't have, like, a design job or, like, a website or something to do, and I can have, like, 6 or 7 hours just to, like, turn some music on and get lost in the canvas. So, yeah, it's been fun working on this show. I was always shooting. Usually I'm always, like, up to the last minute and, like, under the gun to, like, get the pieces framed and to the studio. So on this show, I was like, we started the process so early, I'm aiming to have all my pieces delivered by the 20th of April, which is a couple of days off. And I just wanted to be like a couple months ahead of it so I could really focus on getting the right people in the building and like not stressing, like in rushing the process. So I like how this process went. I'm going to try when I work with other galleries and do my own other shows to kind of like adapt this model.
So Rico, what are you listening to then when you're painting? I have to know.
I mean, I'm all over the place. It'll be some country. It'll be some Prince, some Rick James. I mean, some Jay-Z. I listen to it all. I mean, my dad and my mother always like music. I mean, my whole family likes music. So, and all my friends are heavily influenced. I mean, I have some friends who rap and do cool stuff. Their music pops up. I just make playlists and just dump songs in there and like, hey, I press play. It's never really a rhyme or reason of what's coming on, but I like what I like. So I'm all over the place.
I was curious about websites. Now, you do websites. You design from floor up and everything. And tell us about that and how maybe your art interacts with that, or maybe doesn't. Maybe that's a completely different mentality. Like the website is this thing, and this is what I do with my art. But talk about that.
I mean, I really don't like the coding aspect of it. My business partner kind of handles all the back end stuff. I mean, I know how it works just in case he can't be on the call and everything like that, but I'm not like a professional coder and stuff like that. But like I said, I can hold my own weight like with a lot of stuff with WordPress, but I'm more of a front end. So I'm the person that once he hands me everything, I create it and make it look pretty and stuff like that. Well, you have to know how to do a little bit of code, just like resize stuff, change colors and everything like that. But kind of in the stack that we build in, it's in WordPress, and we do a lot of stuff with a company called Xthing. So, like, we bought a license to actually get access to any and everything they ever drop. And so we always want to stay current with the web trends and everything like that. So I'm more of a front end, but we've been doing websites with my partner. His name's Kellen Mitchell. For the last, I want to say, 15 years and stuff like that. So every now and then we'll get these random seasons where I'm on behind the computer and stuff like, I mean, I wish you could see where I'm at. I'm in his office right now. We got all the stuff where we make the magic happen.
Yeah, it looks fabulous. So are you still involved with the sports world? Are you still working with like Nike and Puma and all those other?
Actively, I mean, I just did something with Jordan Brand, which is under Nike for the NBA All-Star. So I worked with a company called Graffiti Plus. And I worked with a company, called Agency 3-2, which my friend Taylor and her, I'm not married yet, but I believe fiance, Terrence, they run it. So they hired me to work with the Graffiti Plus people to man a digital graffiti board inside of a pop-up Foot Locker where they had every major brand in there. All the athletes from the NBA were in there working. I got to build a capsule around Jason Tatum, who plays for the Boston Celtics. And they actually, he's always with his son. They call him Deuce. So we built a little package for him too. And then we did a custom Jordan mural, but it's digitally. So you could pull the color away from it. And anybody that came actually used these digital graffiti cans and they could fill it in. And they did a lot of community engagement around that.
Oh my gosh, that sounds great.
No, it was awesome. That was one of the phone calls where I was like freaking out. I'm like, okay, so you're going to get me to San Francisco. I get to be involved and go to all the dope parties and I get to work. I'm a sneakerhead. So like anything Jordan, Nike is always a plus and it's amazing.
You know, I may have asked you this on our previous interview, but I'm going to explore it again. Is there some kind of art, or maybe not even art, creative activity that you want to do that you have never done?
I would love to actually get into sculptures. Okay. So I've always looked to, like, find somebody. I just haven't found anybody that's, like, cool enough to, like, open the door for the mentor stuff. And I'm not saying I'm looking too hard, but I've always wanted to do that. And I've met some people and I'm like, if I don't get the right vibe, I won't bother you type stuff. So, but I haven't found anybody in my network, which is crazy because I work with so many people that's really into the sculptures.
Well, maybe we can hook you up with one of them on our show. We've had a lot of sculptors on our show and maybe they make that connection, whatever it would take.
Hey,
yeah, because I think your work and your style would translate really beautiful into sculpture of all sizes, you know?
Definitely. I mean, if you got someone in network, I'd love to have the conversation because that's the one thing I've always thought about when I'm like, I just don't even know where to start because I just haven't really met anybody that's like super close in my network just now.
So April 20th is like right here. So you are on schedule to meet your self-imposed deadline?
I was really on schedule. I had a little family emergency that happened last week, so it kind of took me off the grid for a little bit. So I think I would have hit it dead on. But, I mean, as long as no more hiccups happen over the next couple of days, I think I could still hit it because, I mean, I love knocking goals out. So, I mean, I wouldn't feel bad if I finished everything on the 22nd or something like that, but I hope I hit it on 420.
Oh, it's very impressive.
Thank you.
And any other long-term exhibits? You know, we talked about some of the future things. You got the Guichard exhibit, but like coming up in later in the year or next year, projects?
I've had a couple meetings. I'm trying to do a show. It's actually like I'm trying to get the best way to put it. I had a meeting with one of my friends who's a collector and a very, very successful businesswoman. And she asked me like what I wanted to do in the next like 1 or 2 years. And one of my biggest things was I wanted to actually be on the Art Basel scene. So not just like Art Basel in Miami. She explained, I didn't even know how big the scope of Art Basel was. Cause I've done shows with sponsored shows with like Mountain Dew and Red Bull out there, but that's not Art Basel. Like I wanted, I researched something. I think they said that the last year, the average cost of each piece sold was $16,383. I want to get in that.
in that zone.
But she explained that it takes a lot, and you actually have to go and travel and get the people need to know who you really are to get in there because it's some big time art stuff going on. But in that meeting, we discussed doing something in Tokyo because I know she's done business out there, and we had a discussion about kind of doing a hijack show out there, like renting a space out there, bringing materials out there to do paintings, taking artwork that's already done specifically for Tokyo, getting it framed how they like their stuff in Tokyo, hanging it, working in there, bringing speakers, like just having the time of our lives. Like I do in Chicago already, but in Shibuya, I believe she said, it's like the Manhattan out there. And she's like, that would cause such a stir.
Exciting.
So we're trying to do that. We're working logistics, and I'm saving my coin. Because, yeah, we did the math on it. It's going to cost some money. But if we can't do it this year, sometime next year, I'm going to go out there and just and shake up their art scene and have them asking, who are you and why are you from Chicago doing this here? Right. And hopefully get some press that'll make us a lot of money.
Yeah, we're rooting for you.
Thank you so much.
What do you do for fun outside of art?
I love shooting pool. Like, I'm a pool shark. I make a lot of people mad because I play with one hand. They think I'm trying to be cocky, and I just grew up in a pool household, and I play with a lot of people that play with one hand. I was like, I want to master that, and I mastered it. So I love shooting pool. I love eating, so I'm always down to go get some food and try a new restaurant. And luckily, in Chicago, so many places. And then traveling, I'm always down to get on a flight.
Great. Well, in our final minute here, I want to give you a chance to share like how people can find your work online and just recap some of your upcoming events coming on for yourself.
Okay. The best place is to find my artwork is Instagram. So it goes by Rico the Great. So it's the @ RECOTHEGREAT. And then my website, which I'm refreshing, but it still has a lot of work on there, is www.ahmadlee.com. And then my show is going to be at Gallery Gouchard on Friday, June 20th. So if you're free and in the area, please pull up. It'll be a great time.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art in the Air and giving us a repeat visit and kind of updating Ahmad Lee, and otherwise known as Rico the Great. And you can find him also at the Gallery Gouchard website, and he has his own page there. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your ongoing art journey.
No problem. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, yeah. It's so fantastic seeing you. Best of luck.
Good. I am. I'm happy. Happy to see you guys are still doing good.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker, and for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air. We rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry are on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Are on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.